This is part two of the February meeting.
Okay, Sam said that he was ready for me to start without any further introduction, so we will do that, and before I say any more, I need to find out how long you want to be here. What do you have, 30-minute programs or 20 minutes?
We'll get up and leave when you...
Somebody said when I came in out of school a while ago that might have been late, said Abbotsburg, it won't take long to talk about that. I don't know about that.
Need to be back. Some of us had to be back down to the historical building too.
Okay, well that's about 37 minutes from now. All that said, let me say that I'm flattered and honored and it's to be asked to do this. And it's a subject near and dear to me. And it's a thing that's hard to organize. So I'm going to end up rambling. I've got a bunch of pictures here that I think you will find interesting. And I did try to get them in some semblance of order. I was born and reared in Abbotsburg and spent the first, well, until I finished college, part of my life there. And really never gave much thought to Abbotsburg until recent years when I became interested in trying to trace my family's history a little bit. And in doing that, I wound up talking to a young lady from Sedalia, Missouri named Bonnie Yarber Eck, E-C-K. And Bonnie's mother grew up in Abbotsburg, and so Bonnie and I began to communicate with each other, and we envisioned one day writing a book about Abbotsburg. Bonnie's health is very bad. She's had a liver transplant some 15 years ago, and she lives now in Clemson, South Carolina with her sister. And I don't know if Bonnie's health is ever going to allow her to collaborate with me to write a book or not. But we feel like, the two of us, that there's a whole lot that needs to be known about Abbotsburg that most people don't know. If you ride along on Highway 211 today, you will see this sign. And if you look closely at that sign, you see it says Abbotsburg on the back side of it as well. So Abbotsburg is about this big if you're riding down the highway. And I dare say that most people who live there today have no clue about the past of Abbotsburg. So all that said, Abbotsburg is where it is basically because of two things. One being the abundance of virgin longleaf yellow pine timber that used to stand there in the mid-1800s. And the other thing was the railroad happened to pass through that timber. Now the railroad was built to be an airline railroad. And all my life I wondered, why do they call it airline railroad? Well, I found out. They set out to build a railroad from Wilmington to Rutherfordton, which is over there about off the map, in a straight line. That is a line through the air, hence the airline railroad. Well, when they got to, they started at Navassa, which then was called Riverside, right here. And when they got to East Arcadia, which is somewhere along in here, they realized that if they continued on the path they were starting, they were going to go over into South Carolina some 18 miles. You see the state line bends right there near, wherever it bends. So they made a 1 1/2 degree course correction to the north to make it avoid the state line. And so doing that brought it right through what is Abbotsburg and Bladenboro and Lumberton and all those places. More about the railroad later. Most people don't realize that Abbotsburg was chartered as a town by the legislature in North Carolina. It was chartered in 1903, the same year that Bladenboro was chartered. This is an actual copy of the charter an act incorporating the town of Abbotsburg and Bladen County. It talks about the corporate limits. City limits are going to be from the 49th mile post to the 50th mile post along the Carolina Central Railroad. And today, CSX has reversed the mile markers. They used to start at Wilmington and got increasing going west, and now CSX has them originating in the west and getting larger going toward Wilmington. So they're at 2 or 300 now or something instead of 49 to 50. But the Brown Marsh Swamp was one of the boundaries. The Bowl Branch was a northern boundary. And I can't really find the Bowl Branch, but I've learned that the word bowl, B-O-L-E, means reference to the trunk of a tree, meaning straight. So there's a ditch that I know of that I think may be the Bowl Branch. And that said, Abbotsburg would be about a square mile. It talks about the officers shall be a mayor, five commissioners, a marshal, clerk, and a treasurer. It talks about the commissioners shall from time to time, other officers that as the commissioner shall determine. Special police, it talks about an election should be held biannually thereafter for the election of mayor and five commissioners. The rate of taxation is provided by this act. This act shall be enforced from and after its ratification. Read three times and ratified the 6th day of March 1903. And it remained such until it was repealed in 1939, a year after I was born. And you say, well, why did they repeal it? I guess because by that time, many people had moved away. The town was dying and it dried up. So this is the act of the legislature, General Assembly, that caused Abbotsburg to cease to be an official town. Here is a photocopy of an actual land deed that I found that references a place called AI. You think I would have had time in the last 2 weeks to look up the scripture for this. Maybe some of you know. But AI is a scriptural reference. And it refers to a place in Bible times. And it's, if you find that scripture, and I have, biblical writer refers to it as a desolate place. And the reason I mention this to you today, after the railroad came through, probably the first known settler was a preacher named James Cashwell. Reverend James Cashwell came from Cumberland County, and he built a cabin along by the railroad track. And he gave that cabin or that location the name AI. And when I first heard that, it blew me away. I thought, why would anybody name anything AI? And then I read the scripture and I understood it. A desolate place. And he thought that that was a desolate place. And I can imagine that. Nothing but pine timber around you. I can also imagine that there were cart paths and that kind of means of getting about even before the railroad came. But this deed, I think I know where this land is, he's talking about. That certain lot of land situated in the west edge of Abbotsburg and lying on the south side of the railroad, beginning on the railroad at a point formerly called AI and running south so many degrees, 420 feet into Cashwell Street. Cashwell Street today is the old Abbotsburg Road. It goes from here the back way to Abbotsburg. Back then it was known as Cashwell Street. And it goes on to say another 120 feet and so on around and back to the beginning corner and containing about 1 acre. This is Colonel Joseph Carter Abbott. He's the man for whom Abbotsburg received its name. So interesting to me to learn about him. I didn't really know 10 years ago how it got its name. Abbott was born in Concord, New Hampshire, and he was a newspaper man. He was well educated, but he always had a bent toward military things. And just before the Civil War, he was enamored with the idea of raising a regiment of fighting men. And he was given authority by the New Hampshire government to do that. And he got together troops, and they called themselves the New Hampshire 7th Regiment. And I just talked to Leighton a little about that. He came down here during the Civil War with his 7th Regiment. And it was he and his men who were instrumental in the taking, or in our case, the losing of Fort Fisher. Now you know that Fort Fisher was a key embattlement in the war because we were getting supplies and by that means. And the Union forces tried to blockade Fort Fisher. And you know, we had blockade runners that would scoot up and down and bring supplies. And my grandfather, John Kelly I, was a soldier stationed at Fort Fisher, fighting for the Confederate forces. And this Abbott guy comes down with his men and helps take Fort Fisher away from us. And it wasn't long after Fort Fisher fell that the war was declared over. And we surrendered, you know, and that's all history. Turns out that, well, after the war, Abbott came back south with some friends, and these guys were collectively known as carpetbaggers. And if you think about it, this area of the state was, well, the whole South was devastated following the war. Nobody had any money, nobody had jobs. And this guy came back with money. No doubt he had seen that all that pine timber at Abbotsburg, or what was in an area of Bladen County. And he saw an opportunity, and he and his men hired 150 men and built a big factory at Abbotsburg. So you never imagined that that could ever have been if you rode by there today and looked. He went on to get involved in politics and was elected to the state legislature representing this part of the state in North Carolina. And within a year was elected to the United States Senate to represent North Carolina. So who would know that Abbott was a U.S. Senator? Now this is his official Senate portrait. And I got that from the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. People don't know that. After the fall of Abbotsburg and so on, Abbott died in 1891, I believe is the date. And I think he had a brain tumor that killed him. And I think he was originally buried at Wilmington. By the way, he resided at Wilmington. But he had a house also at Abbotsburg, because my granddaddy, in his diary, wrote about working on Abbott's house. Probably helped build his house at Abbotsburg. But ultimately, he was moved back to New Hampshire for burial. And his remains now are in the Valley Cemetery in Manchester, New Hampshire. This is his official discharge. He was, I didn't mean to do that. Hold on a second. Back up, kid. He entered as a lieutenant colonel, discharged as a colonel, but he was breveted for valor at the Fort Fisher battle as brigadier general. The word brevet means brief, so that was a brief designation. This is a picture of his burial place in Valley Cemetery. And I thought about going up there to make these pictures, and I thought, boy, that's going to cost me if I do that. And I went online and I found Valley Cemetery and got a contact number. Called up there and got in contact with a lady named Judith Aron, A-R-O-N, told her what I wanted, and she said, I'll make the photograph for you. So she went out to the cemetery and made the photograph for me, very nice of her, and sent them to me. This is Abbott's stone, and I had the date right, 18, did I say 91 or 81? 81, missed it 10 years. He was married twice, and he had a penchant for young women. This is his wife, Delia W. And she died, I knew that, I did it again. Hitting the wrong button.
Jerry, go back to that date,
please, on this. On Abbott?
October 8th,
1881.
He was born
July, is that
13? 13. 15.
23.
July 13?
That's 15.
One or the other, 1825.
He's not been recognized as being a Civil War veteran?
I don't know.
The gravestone?
I don't know.
Looks like somebody over there giving a footstone something.
Well.
They're free.
I don't know. That's a good point. These pictures are about 2 years old. I've had them about 2 years. But his wife, Delia or Delia, however you say that, she died in 1854?
50.
At age 22. And he married again to Harriet, who died in 1865, about the time the war was over, and she was just 27. And they had a daughter named Delia, Delia, however you pronounce that, who is now deceased and buried also in that cemetery. This is my granddaddy. This is John Kelly Baldwin the First. And when I tell people that my granddaddy fought in the Civil War, they look at me like they're sorry for me. you're talking about your great-granddaddy. No, this is my granddaddy. And that's possible because the generation that got lost in my family due to my dad being married for 40 years and a childless marriage. And when I was born, my dad was 62 years old. Married at 21 for 40 years. His wife died. A year later, he married my mother. And another year, I was born. And believe it or not, my granddaddy fought in the Civil War.
My mother's grandfather did, too.
Okay. Now, he was, those of you that know me well know that I'm interested in mechanics and woodworking and gadgets of all kinds. And this guy was, he was Abbott's, one of his main men at the big factory that he had. And fortunately for me and everybody else, he kept a diary. And I've got a copy of it over there on the table. There's his discharge record. He was a private. And as I said earlier, was stationed at Fort Fisher. Probably not at the same time Abbott was there. According to the diary, they moved my granddaddy around to different places. He was at Bentonville, and he was all over the place. And that was earlier in the war. Abbott was there later in the war. This is the diary I mentioned that he kept. These are the original volumes. They are now at the University of North Carolina Wilson Library in Chapel Hill. My aunt, Pearl Baldwin Bowie, had possession of these actual old documents. And she gave them to the university to go in their Southern Historical Collection. And when I was a child, they were around my daddy's house, and I saw them. They were just lying around the house, and I used to pick them up and look at them and play with them. And probably Aunt Pearl saw that I was going to destroy them. And she confiscated them and gave them to Wilson Library. And I hadn't seen them in 60 years. So about 5 years ago, my wife and I went up to Chapel Hill one day and went to the Wilson Library and checked them out and sat there and looked over them again. And it was very interesting to do that. They won't let you make pictures of anything. In fact, they're very jealous about what you have on your person when you go in there. Take all the notes you want on their paper using their pencil. You go in there empty-handed, come out with your notes. Now, for a fee, they will make pictures for you. $10 a pop. So I wrote back, I want a picture of the book. Lay them out on the table and photograph them. And that's how I got this picture. That's a picture that I ordered. That's a typical page in his diary in the original manuscript. And he wrote one-liners. Every day he'd write one line. And you see he's talking about, I think that's Saturday. Went to preaching at the White Lake Church. Sermon by somebody from like Matthew 24th chapter. And then on Sunday, went to church again. Went to church. Can't read where it says. But they did an awful lot of going to church. All during the week. Many, many church services. This is a photograph of the old factory that used to be at Abbotsburg that Abbott built and that my granddaddy worked at. Oh, just about everything. Good question. Look at this. This is an advertisement in the Haddock's business directory from the city of Wilmington. And Joseph C. Abbott, Alex Strauss, Lawson Rice, and H.C. Servoss were the carpetbaggers that built that. Cape Fear Building Company, Office of Wilmington, works at Abbotsburg, builders and contractors, and then everything you might want built. Private residences, public buildings, bridges, railroad cars, moldings, brackets, banisters, balusters, mule posts, hand railings, window and door frame, fencing, juniper and cypress doors, sash and blinds. What else does that leave? Now going back to this, I think that building right there is where they built the railroad cars. Because it's plenty big and there's a track going into it, see? And you can see there's at least two smokestacks going. Now I've got an actual photograph, another photograph that'll show an engine very much like that one, which we'll get to in a minute. These are cross ties. And Jerry Arbor is of my vintage and also an Abbotsburg guy, and you know about him. And he and I have collaborated some on this, and we think that this picture was made as you stand on the railroad track where it crosses the Twisted Hickory Road, looking west. That's where we think this was made. M.D. Johnson at Clarkton had this photograph originally, I think. And I copied it from Charlene Johnson Falls, who is M.D.'s brother's daughter. And she still lives at Abbotsburg and is in very bad health and very old. And I went to see her a year ago and got written permission to use this picture in a book if I should ever get that far. That's the only known picture I know of those factories at Abbotsburg. This is another advertisement in the Haddock book. Here it's called a Blade and Land Company. They changed this. They started out Blade and Land Company, and they changed the name to Cape Fear Building Company. Manufacturers and dealers and all kinds of yellow pine lumber, shingle, staves, etc. Joseph C. Abbott, George Z. French, and then that ad down there is a different business on the same page. This is a sort of a crude sketch of Abbotsburg. Railroad, obviously, here. Highway 211 is this mark right here. What we know today as Twisted Hickory Road is this road, also called NC 1003. This is the old Abbotsburg Road, or the back road to Abbotsburg. This is... what do they call it today, Kent? What's that street called today?
Drake Road.
Grimsley Road. This is Grimsley Farm, that's the old Abbotsburg Road.
That's what I was thinking.
It's Grimsley Farm down there.
I thought that was back into that.
Yeah, I misspoke there.
Yeah.
This is the Brown Marsh Swamp here. The present Baptist Church is located right here. The designation 27 here, this general area right in here, is where we think the old mills were.
Is that just woods about?
Mostly woods. There is about a 2-acre clearing in there. I noticed just the other day somebody's cleared some land in there.
The mill stood between what dates?
The railroad in 211.
What dates was the mill there?
Well, it wasn't built until after the war, which ended in 65. So, and it was gone before I was born in 38. And I remember a huge concrete hook being out there that my daddy always said was where the boiler was for the mill. And it was in that area I mentioned. Nobody's exactly sure why the mills went away. Lots of comments of the effect that they burned. And that makes sense because everything, they were all wooden buildings. They didn't have a lot of apparatus to fight fire with back in those days. And plus, they probably used up the available timber. Because they were shipping, they made prefab homes. And I know they shipped one to Brazil. And there was already every piece cut by pattern and ready to put together. There are existing maps. I forgot where I got this one. But this is NC-211 going right here. SR-1003, which is twisted hickory right here. The railroad in this picture is off the picture down here. But you see there's an alley here, and then you have Johnson Street, and the property is laid off in lots. Here's another grid map. State Highway, which is 211. Bladen Street, they call this street, which is now Twisted Hickory. Here's the railroad going here. There's Virginia Street, Johnson Street again, the alley. This big lot on the corner is owned by Samuel Alexander Long Johnson, S-A-L Johnson. My daddy had lots right here, had a store there. But the point of this picture is that they did have a lot of street layouts there. This is a modern day view of a portion of the old Abbotsburg-Yorkville Road. It started at Yorkville is what we call Richardson. And it meanders around, it starts up there at Richardson. And it crosses Boyce and Jerry White's Hunting Preserve Farm, which is where this picture was made. It came out, it crosses 242 out about where the Storm Road is, and it re-entered at Abbotsburg near where Glenda Ward lived on 211. This is one of the streets still visible today at Abbotsburg. Eddie Walters would know about this street. This one runs parallel to the railroad and went to
Lester Walters.
Yeah, I can't think of his name. And I made this picture a few years ago, standing about where the Walters home was, looking back toward the Twisted Hickory Road. And of course it's still there because it was packed so hard that trees and things won't grow in it. And there's another street that's still visible today that goes beside of George Donald Walters' house, Duck Walter, and goes straight back away from the Twisted Hickory. And I have that picture somewhere. I couldn't find it the other day. Before my time, we were told that strawberries were a big thing at Abbotsburg, and this is a picture I got from somewhere of a strawberry field at Abbotsburg. And apparently back in those days, if anybody came with a camera, people put on their best clothes they had, put on their bonnets, and made believe they were working in a strawberry field. I don't think you'd go out and pick strawberries dressed that way. Here's another strawberry picture of them on a wagon. They shipped them, I guess, by means of rail. But they had to get them through the railhead in the wagon. There's about 30 people in that picture. They raked up all the children and everybody. Probably the first school at Abbotsburg. I'm not sure where that stood. This picture may be familiar to some of you. This is what I grew up knowing as Abbotsburg Baptist Church. But before it was a church, it was a school. And in 1927, the Board of Education built a brick school, and they sold the previous school to the Baptist Church. And they added a steeple. I didn't mean to do that. I keep doing that. I got a new toy here. I'm not accustomed to it. That's where I want to be. They added a steeple, and that's where I started going to church when I was a little boy. Okay, this is the new brick school that was built in 1927. I went to first grade in that school, and it was pretty modern. Even so, we had to build a fire every day in the pot bed of stove. They had a coal pile out back, and even as a first grader, I remember bringing in buckets of coal. And I think that's probably what burned it down. I'm told there's two theories about why it got burned. And one of them was that the janitor had a habit of talking and gossiping after school. And he had a box of ashes he'd taken up and forgot them and left them there. And they had clinkers in there that set the building on fire. It burned while I was in the second grade. My folks had taken me out of there and put me in Clarkton School. And I remember on a cold winter's night seeing the flames from that school as it burned.
Where was it located, Jim?
It was, if you know, do you know where Shane Todd's residence is today?
No.
I can't think of
it. You turn on the old Abbotsburg Road.
You come up the old Abbotsburg Road from the Abbotsburg Church. About
200 yards
on the left. There's a grove, there's a pine.
There's trees right there somewhere.
Yeah, there's a pine thicket there now.
Before you get to 1003.
Now you're coming off 1003 going away from it. Back this way.
Kelly, you might mention that that was not a high school.
No, they had grades up through 7th or 8th or something like that.
And those students went to Parkton High School.
I guess.
At that time. I know mother did.
Okay.
All
right. I could talk for 25 more minutes about that school, but I don't have time. I was able to get, I've interviewed about 20, 25 people over a period of 5 years. And one nice lady shared with me a perfect attendance certificate that she had. But she said, now don't you use my name. So I deleted her name right there. But that signed, the year of 1933, perfect attendance at Abbotsburg School, signed by G.L. Gladstone. Purdy Bullard, who died recently, remembers Mr. Gladstone very well. He's one of the interviewees that I talked to. Here is a typical teacher's contract. Abbotts Township, white race. I thought there was a year on there somewhere.
27.
Teacher was Glenn Cashwell. The secretary of school board was A.D. Cashwell. That's Arthur Dixon Cashwell. And if my time holds out, you'll hear about him later. That school, I actually had some bricks that came out of that school. I went and dug it up about 2 years ago. That school was built out of terracotta block. And then they put a brick skin on the outside. Of all of the thousands of bricks that are there, I happened to pick up one that was very interesting. At the brick factory where that brick was made, one of the workers scribbled some math, did some addition on it, right into the brick there. And I thought that was very interesting. This is a railroad depot that used to stand at Abbotsburg. It was built on the same pattern as the one that Bladenboro and Clarkton had. I do not remember that depot. But people as old as Benny McCollum do. I've talked to several people that remember it very well. And apparently they thought a lot about it because it's well landscaped.
Is that a telegraph pole there?
Yes. Yeah, they had lots of telegraph wires that went by there.
You see the limbs on it. Notice that? You see where the limbs cut off the top of it? That was homemade.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're talking about the pole. Yeah. Yeah. That's very observant.
Yeah. Like,
this is the little depot that I remember. They tore down the big one and built a little shelter for people to hover in when they waited for the train. And the train stopped on demand. If you wanted to ride, and it didn't stop anyway, you went out and said, stop, you know, you'd get on and ride. Now, they typically stopped for putting the mail off and on, but it didn't always stop. And they had my mother ran the post office for a while, and they had a gadget that she'd hang the mail bag on and pull a lever, and it stuck the mail bag out way out in the air. And when the train came along, the guy in the mail car had a steel thing. He'd reach out and snag that bag as the train flew past. And he would throw out the discharging mail. It was, and that's wild, isn't it?
There's an old house story in Clarkton about the headless man that walks the tracks. I remember when I was a teenager, that was the big thing, was going back to where the old train was. Yeah. That was supposedly what had happened was one of the mailbag things that were out had clipped his head.
His name was Joe Baldwin, by the way, no relation to that.
Is that the house on the corner, y'all used to go that road down the railroad track?
That two-story house.
Now this is the Z.G. Thompson house. There was another house that stood right here.
Maybe that was it, right on the corner.
And that's the one I'm asking you to try to get, see if...
I got a little picture of one. You just can barely see the front edge of the house.
Yeah, I've seen that picture too. The house he's talking about stood right here in the intersection. We call it the big house.
Yeah.
This is the Z.G. Thompson house. Can't remember who that is. That was the replacement smaller depot. This street right here is now called Bradshaw Street. This street running here is Twisted Hickory Road. And the railroad, of course, goes right here. That's a close-up. Eddie might remember somebody, recognize somebody in this picture. That's Margaret. That's Margaret right there.
I believe the lady next to her on the right is Madge.
Probably so.
Sister.
This is Reese Walters, I believe.
Right.
When I was a little boy, there was a steam engine that pulled a train by Appleburg, and my daddy was tied sort of to the railroad, and he was able to get me a ride on that steam engine one day. And then one day they didn't have a steam engine, they had a big diesel. And the local people nicknamed it the Bow Weevil. Because it looked like a beetle, I guess. I don't know why they called it that. Now, it's 2 o'clock, and I'm just getting warmed up. I can stop right here. I've got about 30, 40 more pictures. But I'll do like you want to do. If anybody has to go.
Sam, I'll be out there after this.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, I do.
Okay, I was fixing that. I come just to get one picture. Can you stay here? Because I can stay.
I will not be offended if you leave, and I'll stay as long as you want to listen to me. Thank you very much. My
he
pleasure.
He can't go if I don't go. I've been toyed. I wish I could stay.
Thank you very much.
We went on a trip one time ago. Lumberton rode back. We was driving like that. 56. That's when we still had the passenger trains going for good.
I mentioned a while ago, I would show you Carolina Central Engine. The railroad changed names a number of times. It started out as the WCR, the Wilmington, Charlotte, and Rutherford Railroad. They went into receivership right after the war. They just went bankrupt. The Carolina Central took it over. And then Carolina Central was absorbed and taken over by Seaboard Airline, which is what I remember when I was little. And now, of course, it's CSX. And CSX is really big. They're based in Jacksonville, Florida. and they're in about half of the states in the continental United States. But that's the type of engine that they had. Now I've got a series of some of the homes at Abbotsburg. This is what I remember as a Kurt Smith house, and it, within itself it's not noteworthy, but in the back of that house, according to Jerry Yarber, is one of the old schoolhouses that was incorporated into the back of that house. They built around it and kept building. This is the Charlie McKeithen house, which I think is one of the older houses in Abbotsburg. Very likely. Don't know who built it, but it's an old, old, old house. And you say, well, why do old buildings remain like that? Well, they made them out of cart pine in those days, and termites can't eat it. So about the only way you lose that building would be if it burned. The Benjamin Franklin Yarborough house is still standing. It's been remodeled, and Stuart Young lives in it now. It's on the Grimsley Farm Road. And by the way, that street was called Kelly Street back in the old days. Grimsley Farm was Kelly Street. This is the John Clark Cashwell home, which is still standing. And it's interesting because of its many, many, many gables. I don't know how many gables are on that thing, but they keep on going.
Where is that?
It's on the Grimsley Farm Road, about within sight of the intersection with Twisted Hickory. A guy named Melvin Van Noy lives there now. He married Pauline it'll come in a minute. Helms. Pauline Helms. And Miss Pauline died a couple of years ago, and Melvin.
Is the little cemetery over there across the field from my house?
Yeah, that's the one where Billy and I were working.
Yeah, Cashwell.
Yeah, Cashwell Cane Cemetery.
I went in over one day and she told me how to get to that cemetery. You couldn't see it.
Yeah, I misspoke. I said Pauline's mother died. Mm-hmm. Old Miss Helms.
Put a hole so cemetery so it's gone there.
Right. Saw it not too long ago.
I think that old man was involved in some of that.
There's the one you wanted to see.
That's it?
That's the Ben Ballas home. People remember.
I hear people talking about the staircases.
Yeah, we'll
see. The haunted house and all this other stuff, and I'm just looking at, you know.
There's Ben Ballas right there, and this man here is probably Earl Russ. Not enough detail. But if it is, that's Ronnie Russ's daddy, if that's who it is. And there's some vintage. You can tell about what year this was made. Probably, what is that, a 40-something?
Probably late 40, early 50.
Be about 40, late 40s.
Yeah, I was told that every room in here was brick walls, and everything was outside the wall.
Probably.
The plumbing and wiring and everything.
He didn't build these steps until later. And I remember I was a small boy when all that was done. And I remember thinking the house looked a lot better before he built the steps on the outside.
What year was the house built?
Cannot tell you, but it was must have been about somewhere about 1940.
Well, there's a lady down there on the bottom with an apron on, it looks like.
Probably Miss Lou, that was his wife. But again, the detail is...
Daddy said when he was a little boy, though, that he used to put everybody's car and drive on White Lake.
Behind this house, he had an airstrip.
Yeah.
And of course, they Ben became wealthy because they invented the tobacco cure.
Ah, so that is true.
And there's Bill Burney owns this cure. I went to Bill's and made a picture of it. There's several more around, collector's items.
There's a couple in the historical.
Really?
I saw.
Okay. There's some around here and there.
Did anybody fly except Hoover? Hoover used to.
Junie, Hoover's brother Junie did. Junie wrecked the airplane down there one day and and escaped with a cut. He cut his little finger getting out of the plane. And he never flew again. That was enough for him. I remember that well. They came in a flatbed truck and took that airplane apart and hauled it away. This is a grainy picture of the old Z.G. Thompson home. Zachariah Thompson was a merchant. He had a store in the bottom and he lived in the top. And he was also one of the first postmasters at Abbotsford. And you saw that house a while ago when I showed you the intersection.
Did they do dancing and fiddle playing and all that?
No, that's the picture I couldn't get in there. That was Uncle Rupert. I'll talk about that when I get there. There's an even grainier picture of Zachariah Thompson's house. This is my dad's home. It's not really that historic, but I threw it in there. Daddy built this house in 1913.
It will be one day, won't it?
Yeah, it's another one of those fat whitewood houses that the termites won't eat. Harold Helms lives there now, one of the Pauline's brothers that I mentioned a while ago. This is the Robbins house, another one of the real older houses at Appleburg. I don't know if Gene and Bernice owned that or not. Did they do? It's right behind their house.
I think it goes, their land goes all the way to the railroad, so I do believe he owned it. I
mean, he has some stuff stored. Because when I made this picture, he was viable and he was letting me go there and make the picture. The Robbinses were from Raleigh and they came down and they didn't build a house, but they would come down like a vacation home and spend time down there. This is the Carl Atkinson home. One of my best friends growing up, Frank Ross Jr. lived there when he was a little boy. And it's been torn down now and Carolyn LaFrage Anglin built a new house there on that property. But that's the original, one of the older houses in Appleburg. This is one of the crown jewel houses at Appleburg. This is the A.D. Cashwell house, Arthur Dixon Cashwell. But he didn't build a house. It was built by, what's the hall name at Clarkton? It's an initial.
John
Hall? J.L. Hall? Arthur Dixon Cashwell married I can't remember her name, but anyway, they had a daughter named Eliza Pearl. Oh, he married Pearl Robbins. Arthur Dixon married Pearl Robbins, who ties back to the Robbins house we just saw. And their daughter, Eliza, married Alphonso McEwen. And they had a daughter named Dixie Gray, who married a Tootin. And that's where I got this picture, from Dixie Tootin. And she's big on genealogy, too. And,
one of the other houses you're talking about, the ones that came down from Raleigh.
Yeah.
Daddy used to remember somebody, he didn't own a jewelry store, did he?
Yeah.
That was it.
Janie.
All right. Yes. She went to some college or something down in Atlanta, Georgia, I think Daddy said.
After there was a death, and she had to take over the store.
Yeah, and she went to some, and she lived, she graduated, I believe she lived in Gastonia.
Might have. I think that store is still going.
Yeah, because, B.C. Smith, Billy Smith's son is the attorney for Gastonia. Mm-hmm. He bought the house she lived in.
Okay. See, if you had time, there's no end to this stuff. I understand that the Robbins were jolly guy and Raleigh is very, very interested in all this. His name is William, I think.
Do you have any people identified?
No, have no way of identifying. This house burned. In fact, Dixie told me that her mother barely made it out of that house when it caught fire. They had to rush down the back stairs to get out of there. This house was situated on that street that I mentioned a while ago that went from Duck Walter's house down, and it faced the railroad. And I'm told by, I've heard hand-me-down stories that travelers on the train, when they got to Appleburg, were always amazed at the beauty of the homes that were there. And this would be one of them that they were seeing. That is the Annie LaFrage home. It's as it looks today. It's just rotting down. and it's also near the railroad. And that's Miss Annie. Her name was Stewart. She was Annie Stewart. She married a Lafrage man who was a railroad agent. And Miss Annie later became the railroad agent for Abbotsburg. She also was a cook at the lunchroom at school. And it is her niece, Carolyn, who owns the property where the Carl Atkinson house was tore down.
How do you spell that last name?
Lafrage, L-A and then capital F-R-A-G-E.
Okay.
Lafrage. Now, Carolyn says that her aunt, Miss Annie, actually babysat for Robert E. Lee's children. Yeah, she gave me some pictures, and I didn't include all that stuff. You can go on and on, but ad nauseum, you know, with this. This is an old original Abbotsburg house. This was the Jack Cashwell house, which sat across the street from the J.C. Cashwell house. That's the one with all the gables, you remember? This house sat across the road from it. I thought it was gone. 5 years ago, Benny McCollum said, no, it's not gone. They moved it out on the Shady Grove Road, and they joined it to another house. You see where it joined there? And I was hoping that Glenda would be here. I think that was one of the English houses. And some black folks bought the two houses and put them together. And that's the way it looks today. They made a residence out of two old houses. That picture is really not about the little girls, but it's about this building here. That's Luther Cashwell Jr.'s old store. And I couldn't figure any way to take the children out of it and still have a picture of the store. So that's Linda Kay Yarber and Bonnie Jean Rook.
Where was that store at right there? I think.
If you turn off 211 at the corner and go back south, it was on the left just before the railroad track.
Short bridge,
you see this light pole right here. One day when I was about 8 or 10 years old, in those days people came to town with a mule and a wagon. And this guy had come to town with a mule and a wagon and he hitched the mule to that pole and went in the store. And the train came along. And the train frightened the mule. And the mule reared around and jerked, and the light pole was rotten at the ground. And the pole broke, and it fell. And it pulled the telegraph wires down across the railroad track. And the train cut them all in two. And I remember seeing that when I was little. That's Luther Jr. He was one of my favorite people. He liked me. I was a little boy running around. And back in those days, apples came in wooden boxes. And Luther would save me the apple boxes, and I would take them and make toys out of them, airplanes, little trucks, and that kind of thing.
And he was a Thompson?
No, Cashwell.
Cashwell. Luther
Jr.
Where was that store? Right side of?
Well, he had two stores. The old one, where the little girls were burned out.
Yeah.
And he built a new one on the opposite side of the road. This is his new store.
That paper
cone
box, I bet it had ice in it, didn't it?
Yeah, way back then it did. There was a big store there years ago called the Clark McCauley Company, and it stood near the railroad track. Really big, one of the bigger stores in Abbotsburg. I found this in the Bladen County Library, this copy of an advertisement. This is my daddy's old store, and it's still there. Orrin Young owns it now and using it for storage. Been there forever and ever.
Is that Ed's house right side of it?
That's the Packer house.
Yeah.
Got a picture of him coming up later. Now my daddy was in the sawmill business, and in 1918 or 19, he and Hector Clark bought the timber rights on all that land that Abbott had cut earlier, Second Grove now. All that's been cut and grown back up. And he actually had a store there, and they would pay their workers in tokens. And it says Clark Baldwin Lumber Company. And that's good for a dollar in merchandise.
Thank you, Kent. That's a good program.
Thank you. My daddy had an uncle in Maxton. He was in, ran a store. And he passed away, and my daddy apparently got active in that store at one point. And he came up with some tokens for that business, as well as his business in Appleburg.
The lumber mill here in what used to be here in town used to have their own, as well as Butter's Lumber Company.
I brought these two tokens. The one about the lumber company I don't have. Frank Ross Jr. has that one. He allowed me to photograph it one time. Ronnie Russ's daddy, Earl Russ, ran a store there, one of the last stores. Of course, Charles Wiggins has a store there now, the only store there is there. The last post office before it closed was in this corner right here. And Ronnie's mother, Leola, operated it for 2 months. And she gave it up and they closed it. This was Theodore Johnson's store. And again, I made this, I used this picture not because of the people, but because I wanted you to say that's the only thing I've got to show you his store. But when I was little, you had Theodore Johnson's store, you had Mr. Luther Cashman's store, you had Bill Thompson had a store, Rufus Thompson had a store. There might have been another one, but there was a lot of stores there when I was growing up. This is a list officially from the Postal Department. I had a hard time getting that. But it shows all the postmasters that ever served at Abbotsburg. Abbotsburg was first called Bladen before it was called Abbotsburg. Then it was called Bladen Station. And then it was changed to Abbotsburg on August 19, 1869. So you see that James Cashwell, that preacher I talked about, was the first postmaster. And that post office was viable from 1866 until 1960. So it lasted for 94 years. Zachariah Thompson was postmaster, we mentioned him, was postmaster starting in 1902. My daddy was acting postmaster in 21, was appointed postmaster later that year. Then my mother was appointed acting in 39, the year after I was born, and she kept it from 1940. And after she gave it up, she went back to the classroom to be able to teach again. I do not. Quite different than it is today, I'm sure. I went to Raleigh and in the archives, I found some yearbooks of North Carolina yearbooks published by the News and Observer. And all this data is there. County tax rate, talks about the railroad, originally WCR. Then Carolina Central, then SAL. It gives the justices of the peace. Gus Buller, yeah, that would be Gustavus.
Yeah, John Gustavus Buller.
And I've got that family photograph coming up. But it gives some merchants, Samuel Alexander Long Johnson, Z.G. Thompson, Clark McCauley Company. And you see, Clark McCauley was one of the principal ones there.
Those Avery family, they just blew out, died out? Or
which one?
The Avery family. Are they just still around?
Don't know of any right here. Gerald Garber, I mentioned earlier, was related. He was one of those. And there probably are some, but I'm not sure. It gives constables, shippers of produce, grist mill. J.T. Thompson had a grist mill. Your mayors, H.H. Clark, he's the one my daddy went in the sawmill business with. J.L. Hall, that's the one who built that building. I couldn't think of the name of the position. Marshals, town attorney, H.H. Clark again. Z.G. Thompson, high school principal. And it goes on, Board of Education, population is interesting. They break it down according to white and colored until 1916. Then they show 250 and then white polls 21. I'm not sure what that means.
It's the number of white men that can vote?
Maybe. Maybe so. Chiefs of police, railroad agents, there's Miss Annie Stewart. Remember I said she was, after she married DeFrage, she was a railroad agent. They thought it was important to list the preachers, the Arrow, the Methodist ministers, and then here are the Baptist preachers, high school principals. You remember Gladstone? He's the one that signed that contract. Boarding houses, Zachariah Thompson. C.C. Cashwell, that was the house with Minnie Gable, Clyde Cook. That's not right. That's Clyde. That's not the same guy. There's the hall name again. And I won't bore you with all that. You can go on and on with that.
And this was in a book at the archives?
Yeah.
What's the name of that book?
Your North Carolina Yearbooks.
That turned their war to their department?
Absolutely.
Was he in Flavor or Abbotsford?
Abbotsford. And that was Glenda's death. Glenda Ward's death.
Yeah. I got a picture of it.
Yeah.
Is that in the main library portion or the upstairs portion?
I think it's in the upstairs portion. It's been a long time since I was there. This is S.A.L. Johnson, Sam Johnson. He was an important figure early after birth. And there he is with his family, and there was his house. That's another one of the big houses that stood there. Now on the site of that house today is a single wide trailer that his granddaughter Charlene Falls Johnson lives in. That's kind of across the street from Duck Walters' home. The quality of these pictures, I blew them up because I can fill that screen in. When you blow them up, they get grainy. Now we come to Kent's people. There's his granddaddy and aunt.
Well, poor aunt. Married into, well,
okay.
Her mother married my great-granddaddy. She was a Thompson.
And I need to...
Tombstone's got the pack right.
I need to put a disclaimer in here at this point. There's so many families who I do not have pictures for. So if I don't include somebody's family, it just means, it doesn't mean I'm trying to exclude them. It just means I haven't been there yet.
I'm still trying to rest with some of my
anecdotes. That picture was taken, that last picture was taken, I'd say, about 1901.
Okay. And this is your great...
Great-granddad, Stephen
Patton. Great-granddad, right?
Great-granddad.
Great or great-great?
Just one great.
Great one time. And he's buried at Chaney Grove, I believe.
Yeah.
Name those for me, Kent.
Where is Dewey Gavins squatting down to the left?
Dewey,
and,
yeah.
And Eddie Thompson Packer, the one you just saw shortly a few minutes ago. I'm not sure that is on the right side there.
I believe it's you, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Riston Smith.
Yeah. And that's Ed's house right there. That's, you go inside and look real good, you can see outside through the wall.
That was very Spartan living, wasn't it?
Yeah, it never had running water and didn't have electricity until about 1959.
I mentioned Eliza Cashwell from the big pretty house. She was the one that escaped, narrowly escaped when it burned. This is the Gustavus Bullard picture that I mentioned to Eddie a while ago. And he can help me. That's Gustavus. And
that's the one in the middle is
Granddaddy
Bullard.
That's Oakley. J.O., Joseph Oakley.
The one in the middle is Fabie.
Yeah.
Miss
Janie.
Miss Janie. Good.
Janie Gooden.
Yeah. I'm not sure who the other one is.
Yeah, this is Gus's wife.
Right.
This is Fulton.
And the little girl with the arms is my mother.
Okay.
Fortunately, she's...
Now this, Miss Janie here, Janie Gooden, Janie's mother was my granddaddy's sister.
Was that Oak's wife?
Yes.
Janie?
Yeah. Miss Janie.
Janie Gooden married Oak.
She doesn't have to have been that house since the old Bullard. It's on the Bullard farm.
Where the Bullard Cemetery is.
So it's gone.
Between here and...
Yeah, the Bullard Cemetery.
pretty, the house was pretty near where Miss Ransom's house stood, stands. This is John Smith Kane, and he was a big figure in Abbotsburg. And I relate to him. He's the one that's buried in the Cashel Kane Cemetery. And that's what had me over there cleaning up that day.
I got two stones over there, Cashel. The top, T.C. Thompson, Thomas C. Thompson,
yeah.
And Jesse Thompson.
Mr. Lonnie here was Zachariah's son, and they lived in that old Zachariah Thompson house.
Zach Thompson, what are you talking about?
Well, they had a, he had a brother named. No, this one married a teacher who came there named Eugenia Bradley, and she lived in Sanford.
Zach Thompson graduated with me in 1950.
We're getting about the end. This is supposed to be showing you a tar kiln, and naval stores, or tar and pitch and that kind of thing, was one of the big things at Abbotsburg. In my granddaddy's diary, he writes about barrels of tar and all that. This area right in here is the old tar kiln. There's a kind of a ditch around here, if you can imagine that going around. And this is one of several on Boyce White's hunting preserve. They're being very careful not to disturb those old tar kilns. And of course now, trees have grown all up in it. And when it was a tar kiln, there weren't any trees in it, you know, of course. But they're just leaving nature to do its thing. This is a picture I've only had about 2 months. I got this from Gay Davis, who had it somewhere in the family. And she thinks that it's one of my daddy's sawmills at Abbotsburg. And I think that's probably right. You remember I said that Daddy and H.H. Clark bought the timber rights on 3,000 acres, formerly known as the company lands. And
that wouldn't be right where the Brown Marsh Church is, because right behind it was an old sawmill.
Yeah.
My dad used to climb up.
I climbed it myself. It could be there, or it could be the one in the edge of the Darden Woods. And if it be the one in the Darden area, then Gaston Packer used to work there for my daddy at the mill. And it's kind of speculation as to whether that is.
Well, that's about right, same size.
That is a good picture.
The time frame is correct for it to have been one of his. Yeah. And there's a ton of people in that picture too. I tried to count them one time, but it was interesting. It had rained. There's a mud hole.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that was a tough time in that time. The only other thing I have is my Aunt Pearl, when she gave the diary to the university, would only do that on the condition that they provide her with 3 typewritten copies. Aunt Pearl drove a hard bargain. And I think, and this is one of the typewritten copies, and I think that was done by graduate students, probably for course credit. And it's made with an old clunker typewriter in carbon. And I've had this copy a lot of my life. And I wanted to make copies of it for my children, and I couldn't figure any way to copy it. I tried to Xerox it, you know, photocopy it, and it didn't do well. I tried to like a camera and make pictures of it, and it didn't do well. So about 3 years ago, I just sat down and just typed it. It took me 2 years to type it. But I got the sucker in digital format now on the disc. And I went and had 3 copies printed. I made a trip to Greensboro to have it bound. I included a commentary written by myself in there. Got his picture in there, the whole thing. Made a copy for myself, one for each of my boys. And that's interesting reading. Folks, you've been patient.
Well, you need to put that somewhere in Bladen County at your desk so that other people outside of the family can read. I'd love to be.
I'm all done. I kept you for about an hour, didn't I?
Well, I certainly enjoyed it. I know that is worth every minute to me. We do appreciate it. Well, I tell people really miss the trip, so I can say.
One of his grandsons.